to the Mainland Podcast, episode 27. I'm Michael Citro, the managing editor from themainland.com. Welcome to the program, everybody. We're here to talk about the 1-1 draw against Chicago Fire. We're going to look ahead to the New England Revolution this Saturday night. Joining me tonight are Alan Etzler and Andrew Harrison, our intrepid writers over at the Mainland. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. It's my first time on here, so it's pretty cool.
I'm a seasoned veteran, so I'm ready to go.
Yeah, Alan is a Mainland Podcast virgin, so we're gonna get him broken in tonight. And I like to have everybody on. We're taking turns, and sometimes guys are on 2-3 weeks in a row, and then we don't hear from them for months or at a time. So you never know who's going to be on. It's kind of an interesting thing. So anyway, Chicago Fire came into town as the Eastern Conference's worst team. And they promptly took an early lead on Orlando City. David Akam turning Corey Ash inside out in the right corner and then drilling a shot to the near post that beat Tally Hall, which was probably a goal that Tally would like back. Orlando City came back a little bit later, got a goal that was originally credited to Kyle Larin to give him the MLS rookie goal scoring record, and then it was changed to an Eric Gehrig own goal that is supposedly being reviewed by MLS, and it still has not been announced what the ruling is. So, and I've been checking with the team every day. They're getting sick of my texts. So, we'll find out what that is. But I think the bottom line for me is that Orlando City looked like themselves. They got a lot of chances, even though they blew a lot of chances. they were dominant in possession. But they created chances. They were dangerous. Chicago was a threat on the counter with their speed. But other than that, Chicago wasn't really in the game. Aside from a brief spell after the first after the 18-minute mark when there was a weather delay for an hour, they came back out. Chicago got on the front foot for a few minutes. But other than that, Orlando City, I thought, controlled the game. Alan, let's start with you. What were your overall thoughts on the match and how Orlando City played? And do you think they may have turned a corner?
Well, I think I'd like to see it happen more than just once to say that they've turned a corner, but this did look like the team that we had seen play when they were in a good run of form, back in July and even into June. As far as, you know, what Chicago was doing, the only offense they really had was when they went through Akam, who just used his speed to blow by people. And not that many people are going to be as fast as David Akam. So that, from that standpoint, it is a positive for Orlando City to take. What they did offensively, I really liked what Carlos Rivas was doing. You know, even though he didn't capitalize on his chances, he was creating chances, and these were chances that we hadn't seen in a month from anybody outside on the wing. So I thought that was a really big positive for Orlando City, and I'm interested to see if he'll be in the lineup again Saturday.
Well, he won't be because he got a yellow card.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he is on accumulation. But if he gets more playing time going forward.
Yeah, I thought Carlos Rivas did have a positive game overall. Sure, he had some bad misses. He hit the post late when he could have had a game winner, where Kyle Larin set him up with just a gimme. But, you know, these things happen, especially when guys haven't been playing a lot. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what his, you know, how he's used moving forward. I thought he had a terrific pass that he cut across for Kaká at the top of the box, and Kaká, of all people, missed the net. So, I mean, everybody misses the net sometimes, and it was just unfortunate. But they were creating chances, and that's something we haven't seen of late. The game started with a two-hour weather delay. Now, I'm not going to call it a lightning delay because initially it was just rain. Initially we were just waiting because people were late getting to the game and they wanted to give everyone a chance to get in and maybe let the rain let up a little bit. And that kind of backfired on Orlando City because when the teams came out and warmed up and they were getting ready to play, lightning came and they were sent off the pitch for a very lengthy delay. Our Andrew Harrison was in the stands. Andrew, what was it like to go through that, not only that delay, but then also to come back and after 18 minutes have the game called for another hour before the play resumed?
It was just one of those things that, you know, you just it makes you realize that you're looking forward to the new stadium and a roof. it was just brutal to kind of go through that. It was it just kept coming down harder. It was incredible how you thought it couldn't rain anymore, and then it did. But what was amazing was just the spirit and the stands. I think you really saw that when the players eventually did come onto the field, and they were just like, we're going to skip the national anthem. And then basically the stadium sang it, and everybody waited because we were that excited for the game. And there were so many people that had hung around and had actually made their way to the stadium. I think that it was just a nice feeling to be able to watch the game start. It was a shame that it only lasted 18 minutes initially. But what I saw in those 18 minutes was a team that wanted to play for those people in the stands. And I don't feel like we'd seen that in the past few weeks. So it was really nice to be a part of that, but also be a part of the fact that weather didn't keep people away. We've seen that time and time again across this league where bad weather really lowers attendance. And we didn't get that. We had a big full stadium and a lot of people hung around. And okay, after the second hour and a half, by the time the game got restarted, it really kind of dwindled, but those people that were there are those the people that are going to make this team stay here in this town and make it be here for the long term.
Yeah, they really stuck it out. A big credit to the Orlando City fans. I know some went home because, you know, it gets very, very late, and as the game gets pushed back and back and back, especially if you're there with kids, it's understandable some would leave. I understand that security guards were telling people that were coming into the game that the game had been called. So there may have been some miscommunication downstairs that prevented some more people from coming in, or at least from staying.
The security weren't great at keeping people informed, and they weren't. Everybody was telling a different story, and then, you know, you had some of the leaders of the supporters group saying one thing, which was, you know, make sure you stay or don't care what they're going to tell you. But then those other ones were like, no, you can't even go out. They won't even let you hold anything. And It was really kind of hard to be in that as a fan, because some of us stood out in the rain for like two straight hours while it poured. And you know, to be told that we then had to go back and find our seats, and they were really doing no good with trying to keep people out of your seats, even if you'd been standing there. It was pretty shambolic in terms of the stadium, but, you know, that comes with having our own stadium too, and I'm sure it'll get better.
Yeah, and you know, games like that are no fun for anybody, the people working at the stadium. It makes for a longer night for them. Obviously, they may be getting mixed messages, and communication sort of breaks down in those situations at times when there's, you know, big electrical storms going on, and people have their radios under their rain jackets so they don't get wet and that kind of thing. So, you know, it was a tough night all around in terms of trying to get the game in, but they did get it in, and the team really did respond. Aurelian Collin and a few others came out and were immediately applauding the fans when they came onto the pitch for the match. Which was interesting to see. Usually you see that at the end of the game. But this was, you know, certainly the players showing their appreciation for the fans that hung around and toughed it out. So it was great to see that. But in terms of the overall match play, and I guess the first thing I want to do is let's talk about the goal. Let's talk about the goal. Was it Kyle Larin's goal, or was it an Eric Gehrig own goal? Because I have a hard time telling if the bottom line is that if Kyle Larin has shot the ball or has made an attempt at goal that has gone on goal and then it gets deflected in, it's Kyle Larin's goal. If it is not going on frame and it gets deflected in, it's an own goal. So it's very, very difficult to tell when the ball comes off of Larin where it was actually going to go. Alan, do you have an opinion on this?
To me, when I saw it, I thought it was a clear Larin goal. And then I looked at still shots from, social media and things like that in the past couple of days. I still think it's pretty clear that it should be Larin's goal, just because I can't really see Gehrig touch it. I don't know where it's hitting off of Gehrig when I look at the still shots. To me, it looks like, even if it was deflected, it looked like Larin. I don't know how to judge trajectory, but it looked like it would at least been close to goal. But at the same time, I don't want to give the goal to Kyle anymore because, to me, it's a moment for the kid, and he doesn't get to have that moment if they award him this goal. You know, it kind of ruined the moment for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I understand that. I think, though, and there's also the school of thought that it takes the pressure off of him if they give him the goal and he's got the record.
That's
so,
true also.
I will say this, is I did clearly see that the ball glanced off of Laren and went off of Gehrig's right shoulder. Now, Gehrig, the ball was going downward after it left Laren, but I can't tell if it was going on frame or not. Once it hit Gehrig, it popped up in the air and went over Sean Johnson. So that's how I saw it. Andrew, have you looked at the replay? What are your thoughts on it?
I'm kind of going to go with Alan. It's just so hard to see. I don't think there's a great angle because Gehrig really kind of shields the ball with his body for the deflection. I kind of am more tempted to also go with Alan, the fact that if MLS, I feel like the reason we haven't had a decision yet is because MLS doesn't want to ruin the moment for this kid breaking a record. But I think what we also have to admit is he didn't get up and celebrate like he just scored the rookie record goal. And I feel like that's playing into their decision a little bit too. Like if he felt like it was his goal, I feel like he would have gotten a little bit more crazy, whereas he kind of just sits there. And I don't know if it's that moment where he just hasn't let it sink in yet, but I feel like he would have celebrated a little more if he really felt it was his goal.
He's also a fairly timid kid, though.
I don't know, but you just scored the MLS rookie record goal that, you know, puts your name in the books. There's not many more people who are going to get that chance because they're not going to get the minutes. They're not going to get the opportunities. They're not going to have the service of playing with somebody like Kaká right behind them. And I think it's just interesting that he's had such a phenomenal season and he didn't take that opportunity if he really felt like it was his goal deep down.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. Sometimes when there's a big moment like that, guys will sit there and kind of, you know, let it sink or wash over them. And it's kind of – it's a heavy moment. And sometimes you won't see quite the big celebrations that you might expect. You know, some guys are exuberant right away. Other guys, you know, it's like, oh, my goodness. Like if one that I look back on is – if you remember in the World Cup when John Brooks scored – that was an unusual sort of celebration. It was sort of like his mouth just dropped and he like put his hands over his face. If you looked at him in that moment, you didn't know what had just preceded it. You might think he just got a red card.
I guess so.
So, I mean, it's, I wouldn't judge it certainly by the reaction, but I would say that, the most important thing is to get it right. And I'm all for erring on the side of the offensive player. I mean, in fact, my background's in hockey, so my thought on it is there's no such thing as an own goal in hockey. It's the last player to touch it or the closest player that should get credit for the goal. So, you know, if you make a cross and it goes off a player and in, you sort of made that goal. So, I mean, to give a guy an own goal is sort of like hanging a goat horns on somebody. But if that guy wasn't in the box making that cross, that goal doesn't happen anyway. So, you know, in hockey, they reward the offensive player. They don't penalize the defensive player, which maybe that's just an English thing. You know, came from England. You know, they're a little self-deprecating. I don't know. Anyway, why don't we talk about the fact that Mr. Rivas is going to be missing against the New England Revolution, in addition to a bunch of guys on international duty, Kaká, Kyle Laren, and Darwin Serén. They're all going to be out. We're not going to break shape back yet. If we do have him back, he may be in the 18, but I don't believe he'll start, and he probably won't play more than 10 minutes on that turf up in New England. We'll see. But guys, you know, what do we think is going to happen, you know, tactics-wise or at least lineup-wise going into Saturday night? Alan, I'll start with you, and then we'll get to Andrew. You know, how is this team going to line up?
Oh, gosh. Every time I think I have him figured out, he changes it, even when he doesn't have to. On the back line, I mean, I think they've started to play a little bit better. I thought they looked good against Chicago. I really like Ash being in the lineup. I like when he's on the field because he can push forward. I think the defensive midfielders, I believe it's going to be Carrasco and Higuita, I would assume. The person you really have to fill is Kaká. I mean, we have guys who can play up top. They won't be as good as Kyle Laren. But without Kaká, you know, there's really nobody who can be Kaká. you know, Lewis Neal has played in the mid, Ribeiro has played in the center, so I would assume maybe one of those two guys, but I don't know. I'm not really feeling very good about that particular position.
Andrew, what do you think? You think we might see Neal in the middle of like Bowden on the left and I don't know, Avila or somebody, or Winner on the right, probably, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'd imagine Winner comes back. I mean, he hasn't really had the ability to show what he can do yet due to those two consecutive red cards for Turner and Ramos and always getting pushed back in that position, and then he got sent off himself, plus he missed the other game. So I definitely see him on the right. I would say that I would imagine since we had some success with Ribeiro, he starts up front in place of Larin, so he wouldn't slot into that midfield. I think as Lewis has got older, maybe the center mid role would suit him a little bit more, and I think he is a little bit more defensive-minded occasionally, so he might help some cover for Carrasco, who has sometimes looked out of his depth, and this is a team where, against New England, where he could certainly look out of his depth if they play him at pace and he just gets turned on the wrong side, and it could be dangerous. I definitely think Ash will make a play for a starting role. I do agree with Alan. I think we look better with him on the field. And definitely Bowden going forward. I would love to see if we could get Shea some minutes, but I don't know with that turf, like you say, if it's going to be worth the risk, because we really need him heading down the stretch.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of come to this conclusion in my own mind that I think Neal will play in the middle of Winter and Bowden in the attacking midfield, and then we'll see Ash playing behind Bowden at left back and Ramos on the right. I think that gives you your best – it certainly gives you your best pace on the outside against a very quick New England counterattack. They can come at you very, very quickly, turn things around, and I think you're going to need somebody with Ash's pace and somebody with Ramos's pace to fill those roles. And I agree with you about Ribeiro up top. I think he's probably your best bet remaining on the bench right now for that striker role. And Higuita and Carrasco seems like probably a done deal unless they change shape. This might be one of those weird instances where Adrian Heath decides – let me try a 4-4-2 against this and see what see what these guys can do. He's been very, very reluctant to go to a 4-4-2 this year, but it's certainly an option. I don't think that he likes the predictability of it, but I think everybody who's played soccer kind of knows how to play a 4-4-2, and you know it's comfortable for them. So I think it might be when you're one of those things when you're down a few guys and you really need something reliable, the old 4-4-2 might not be a bad thing to fall back on. So, but we'll see what happens. I got to have you guys as man of the match for the Chicago Fire game. I'm already on record. I did player grades this week, so I'm already on record that Higuita was my man of the match. Alan, who was yours?
Well, I was up there in the press box with you and said I thought Higuita was the best player on the field that night also. So he was mine. I just felt he did a much better job controlling the offense, keeping possession with the team. That's one of the things that we hadn't seen the defensive midfield do in the past couple of matches was keep possession, and they were able to do that against Chicago. So I went with Higuita as well.
Andrew?
I got to agree with you both on Higuita. I thought he played really well. I actually thought he was one of those players that really, really wanted to get this team back on track that night. And I love that passion from him because I feel like we'd missed that from some of our players in previous weeks. But a corollary to that would be my more game player who's getting better every week has been Mateos. I think he's really starting to get better as a player, and I was really concerned when I first saw him, but I felt a little bit more secure that him playing center back after playing a pacey Chicago forward setup.
Yeah, I thought Mateos had certainly his best game since joining Orlando City, which you would expect. I mean, it's going to take guys coming over from Europe. They're rusty. They haven't played since the spring. You know, it's going to take them a few games. They have to learn their teammates. They have to learn new coach, new system, new culture. All of that is new. And even though these guys are veterans and some have played in multiple countries, it's not an easy thing to just slot right in and be great. So I know people were complaining on Twitter about Mateos, and they were complaining, certainly on our website about him, and in Winter as well. But it's like you haven't seen what they can do yet. You just haven't. Our fans haven't even seen what Carlos Rivas can do yet. they don't know what Carlos Rivas is capable of because he hasn't got that many minutes really, and he's you know, just when he started to get comfortable, he came out of the lineup for a while. So, you know, it's soccer's a game where if you're not playing, you know, it can affect you. And then when you can't just throw somebody out there because chemistry is a big part of the game. So it's interesting that we all agree on our man of the match. That hardly ever happens. So I guess we must have gotten it right. What I really liked about Higuita this week is that he channeled that passion. He wasn't reckless with his challenges. Mm-hmm. He wasn't barking at the official, you know, the whole night. He was just up in his opponent's face, like, all the time and being hard to play against. And that's what Adrian Heath wants out of him and Sarin, is to be difficult to play against, to make people not want to play against you. And that the way you do that is you take the ball away, you get in their passing lanes, you get in their face as soon as they got the ball. And I thought that he did a very good job of that. Sarin, I thought, had a slow first hour of the game, but I thought the final 30 minutes, he was as good as anybody on the pitch. He really, really started slow for me and made a lot of bad passes, some turnovers, and you know, it was one thing where it was like, I was just about ready to just say, let's get Servando Carrasco out there, and then he started to turn it around and play better. The last 30 minutes, he was very, very good. So it's a shame that he's now off to have a World Cup qualifier with El Salvador. But, you know, such is the life here for Orlando City fans. It's just when things start to go your way, they still don't go your way. So, you know, overall, Andrew, let me go back to you a little bit about your overall thoughts on Chicago. I mean, is this something that the team can build on?
I would love to say yes, but I feel like we're celebrating a little early in that they were the bottom team in the East, and we're congratulating ourselves playing against those guys. I feel like if we can take it into the next game and feel that passion, but of course there is going to be that team feeling that without Kaká, without Larin, who've scored 20 goals between them, that we're not going to have that chance to break down a solid New England team that is fairly safely into the playoffs. I think that we have to come back after this game. If we've still played that well, then we can start to say that we're turning it around. But I don't want to get too excited about one good performance. I wouldn't say it was a great performance. It was just a good performance that we can build on and take to the next step. But once again, we're losing some building blocks, so we're going to have to move the wall over slightly and rebuild it a little bit until we can put those pieces back.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's going to be hard to build on a performance where you're going to lose, you know, four guys who started in the game on Saturday. And you bring up a good point. Chicago's a bottom feeding team, and they, even though they had just won a game, they had played at midweek. So again, you know, maybe some tired legs. Harry Shipp didn't even start the game. He came in, you know, as a second half substitute. So, you know, for me, it's guarded optimism because it's been since August 1st against Columbus that the team has, you know, dominated possession and looked dangerous in the attack. And certainly they did look dangerous in the attack, but they didn't finish those chances. So there's still some work to be done there, I think, moving forward. But, you know, we've got New England coming up on Saturday. We've talked a little bit about, you know, formation and lineup and that kind of thing. We're going to bring in our special guest now. We're going to talk a little bit about the Revolution and, you know, what we can expect Saturday night from the big matchup. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, our guest is from the Bent Musket writer, Seth McComber. Seth, welcome to the Mainland Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I got to say, guys, before I get going, is I actually was able to visit your stadium, see your team. And I got to say that you guys have kind of a party situation going on there. It felt more like a party than actually a soccer game. There's a lot of chanting going on and a lot of fun in the stands there. So props to you guys, first year in the league here. I know you were in the lower divisions before, but you guys do it right. Definitely worthwhile, definitely worth going down there. Don't tell anyone I was down there, by the way.
Were you at the first matchup between the two teams? Did you come down for the Revs game?
No, it actually just happened that I was at a Colorado Rapids game, and you won, so I think that was probably a little bit better of a atmosphere than maybe.
That was a good game. Yeah, that was in the run of, and actually that was the last game in a run of really good form for the Lions, and then July came along and everything kind of turned on its head.
They still kind of party though when they're at those games. They do have a really passionate fan base. I think it helps that there's a college about 10 minutes from the stadium where you have a lot of those college students also.
Yeah, it's a good atmosphere, and we really it's always kind of been that way, even when the crowds were a little smaller in USL. So, you know, the club has built it up, and the supporter culture is built the right way, I think. Seth, we wanted to have you on to give us the lowdown on the Revs, and obviously the first match between the two clubs was a couple of months ago, and the Revolution took a 2-0 lead, and the Lions came storming back and ended in a 2-2 draw. What has changed with New England since the last time these two teams have met?
Yeah, so I think obviously one of it is having Jermaine Jones back. Unfortunately, he won't be there for this weekend, but I think just having him around the team boosts it quite a bit. The team talks a lot about how Jermaine Jones affects the morale, how it gives him that can-do attitude. Even though he's been back since the injury for 3 games now, and he hasn't really played that many minutes. Right before he left for national team duty, he had 61 minutes before he left the field. So that's a brief stint before the previous two were brief as well. But I think just having Jermaine nearby, that idea that he is going to be a part of the team is absolutely huge. I think also moving beyond that is something that's going to be more relevant this weekend. I think the attack has found their form. I think before, some of these guys weren't necessarily at their peak. Now you have Diego Fagundes. He scored a goal this past weekend. He's now on 3-3 for the season, 3 goals and 3 assists. You have Lee Wynn, who's actually been quite good over the last month. He's been very, very successful. He hasn't reached those heights of MV Lee of last year. And the last person to kind of mention here is Charlie Davies. I mean, Charlie Davies is, playing the hold-up man. He's playing the goal scorer. He's, well-rounded as far as a player goes. I mean, for a guy who spent so long without a goal, without a professional goal, it's amazing how great he's been for the Revolution. Imagine that this is a team that has Juan Agudelo and Teal Bunbury on the bench. That's a pretty dangerous team to have. So once these guys are clicking on all cylinders, it's definitely really dangerous. I think that the defense is shored up as well. That's an underrated storyline. You talked about how the Orlando City Lions, they're able to come back and grab that 2-2 tie. I think that the defense has shored things up a little bit. Andrew Farrell was just on Team of the Week. He is absolutely sensational. Watch how he plays. He's, usurped the position of top defender from Jose Gonsalves. And on the right side, you have Jeremy Hall, who was not playing at the beginning of the season. He wasn't much of a factor. He's kind of settled in nicely. And, of course, on the other side, Chris Tierney. So I think overall, the best thing I think the way to consider it is that the team has tightened the bolts. I think that they're looking at this stretch of games as something that they can actually come together and march towards the playoffs.
Seth, you mentioned Charlie Davies, and Michael, I think you talked about this on Saturday when we were at the game, actually. Charlie's one of the best success stories in soccer. Is there any talk up in New England as far as this kid maybe getting some consideration again for the USMNT squad? Do you hear anything about that? Do you think it's possible just because of how well he's played this season?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely talk about it. Charlie's talked about it himself quite a bit, that the Charlie Davies story is a great story. He'll admit it. He understands that he was on the verge of dying and that he's lucky that he's able to play professional soccer again. And he wants to be there. He wants to at least get that cap again. And what's interesting about Charlie Davies is that, this whole experience has changed him as a player a little bit. And what I mean by that is that he's not just the speedster. He's not just the guy who's going to burn you and head to goal. He's playing as a hold-up forward. He admitted himself that he was not a number 9. He did not view himself as a number 9. But he's playing that role quite well. And he's beating out Juan Agudelo for that role. That's huge, that Charlie Davies is beating Agudelo out for that starting role. And there's talk about it, absolutely. But the problem is, as everyone knows, you can't really predict Klinsmann. And, you know, he hasn't gotten that call up yet. I don't think right now would probably be his time to get called up. You'd probably integrate him during, you know, a January camp or something like that, not in the lead up to the big Mexico, you know, game in October. But, you know, you hope that Charlie Davies does get it, because I often say that if there's going to be a 30 for 30, Charlie Davies is quite the story to tell. This year, when you look at his stats, he has 9 goals and 2 assists. There's not a lot of Americans ahead of him. You look at, you know, Jozy Altidore, you look at Will Bruin, you look at Chris Rolfe. So there's not, you know, Chris Wondolowski, there's other probably names on there. But he's listed among the top goal scorers in MLS, so it'd be foolish not to look at him. But I don't know exactly when or if his time will ever come, because he is advancing in age, and we don't know exactly how Klinsmann thinks.
And then heading into this Saturday, do you guys get a sense that realistically you're happy, despite Orlando being in a slump, that you're happy that, you know, both Kakar and Kyle Aaron are going to be missing for us? And do you guys kind of see this as an easy 3 points heading into this weekend?
I think anyone in New England has learned that there's never easy 3 points. I mean, a few years back, you know, DC was beating us when they couldn't get a win at all, and they were like tying us. And so there's no, in MLS, there is no easy 3 points. You often hear Jay Heaps talk about one game at a time, one game at a time. He's not going to take any competition lightly. That being said, I think that, you know, any time you don't have someone like Akai, you don't have someone like Kyle Aaron, you don't have a lot of the bodies that your opponent is so focused on, so dependent on, of course you're going to be happy. At the same time, I think the Reds would want to have Jermaine Jones. Instead of Jermaine Jones, you're probably going to see Daigo Kobayashi, who doesn't nearly play as well as defense as Jermaine Jones. Or you might see Andy Dorman, who in some ways is like a walking yellow card waiting to happen. He's often getting called for these types of things. So, yeah, I mean, of course the team is happy not to have it. I don't think anyone's taking Orlando City completely lightly, even though they are slumping. But they'd absolutely be happy to walk away with 3 points this Saturday.
Yeah, not just the team has been in a bad run of form, but also Orlando City without Kaká, without Kyle Larin, without Carlos Rivas, and you know, and Darwin Serén is gone as well on international duty. And Breck Shea, even if he plays, he won't be starting. He'll be probably coming off the bench late in the game. So a really, really wounded team as far as injuries and international call-ups and those kind of things go. And that's been an ongoing story with Orlando City all year. Seth, tell us what we can expect tactically from New England. How will they align? You know, what formation will they use? And what is their sort of bread and butter in terms of how they approach the game during this run of form?
Sure. So they've basically stuck to the same formation this year as last year. They're going to play a 4-2-3-1. All right. Your back line, I already mentioned, you're going to have Bobby Shuttleworth in goal. You're going to have Chris Tierney, Jose Gonsalves, Andrew Farrell, and right back is going to be Jeremy Hall. Your midfielders, you're going to have Scott Caldwell, who's very, very good. If you want to like just kind of watch someone play that doesn't always get the credit he deserves, watch Scotty Caldwell, because it's interesting. When he first came to the league, he was a smaller guy, but he's bulked up quite a bit, and you can see just like these smarter plays he makes, shoulder-to-shoulder tackles. Just, you know, he's a really huge asset to the team. And Jermaine Jones actually pegged him at one point to be someone that he hopes replaces him on the national team. So that's kind of a player to watch if you want to watch someone. Next to him will either be Andy Dorman or Daigo Kobayashi. Depends on which way Coach Jay Heaps wants to go. I probably might lean towards Kobayashi unless he wants to go more defensive with Andy Dorman. In front of that, you'll see Lee Wynn, as I mentioned, has been very, very sharp. You'll see Diego Fagundes. You also see Kellen Rowe. Kellen Rowe is kind of an interesting player because he's very streaky. He's a very good player. Some people rate him very, very highly and think that he should be on the national team. But he really, for me, hasn't shown the consistency that you want. So he'll likely be there. But you can maybe see Juan Agudelo, Teal Bunbury. And up top, you'll see Charlie Davies. So that gives you a rundown of who you're likely to see on the field this weekend. As far as tactics go, they want to use their space. They want to have space. You see that when, you know, some of these guys are able to pick up their head, they can find amazing passes. This past weekend, we saw, you know, Chris Tierney play a throw-in to Charlie Davies, and Charlie Davies took a nice touch to Diego Fagundes, and Diego Fagundes just had miles of space, so much space that he was able to just really line up and hit a shot that put him in contention for goal of the week. And it was a New England-based goal. All those guys are from New England. And it just shows you that if you give these guys too much space, they're able to punish you. They're able to put that ball into the back of the net.
Seth, you know, you mentioned that a lot of these guys are in a good run of form right now. And I can't help but look at your schedule from the past month and see you guys only played 3 matches in August. Orlando's been a lot more taxed. They played 7 matches in August. How do you feel like that's helped with this team being in a good run of form, not being overtaxed as far as minutes played go?
It's a blessing and a curse. It depends on, you know, how you look at it. It depends on who you ask. I think that if you ask the team, they wish that some of these breaks came earlier in the season, you know, when they were going through that slump and they had to keep, you know, dogfighting and keep going and keep going. But at the same time, it was nice to try to get, you know, a guy like Jermaine Jones back onto the field. Kellen Rowe had to come out with a knock, but he was able to recover because of that break. So I think when you look at injuries, I think it was beneficial in that way. But in other ways, it hurts momentum a little bit. You know, like if you're winning and you want to keep going, like you talk to a guy like Charlie Davies, he doesn't want to take a break. He wants to keep going. He wants to score more goals. The other thing to think about is, you know, who some of the teams that the Revs were facing. I mean, you look at their winning streak. We're talking about, you know, Philadelphia Union. You know, we know about Philadelphia Union. They only beat them 1-0. Houston Dynamo was a 2-0 win, but that was a game that was, you know, the lightning storm that, you know, lasted, you know, over 2 days. The win against Toronto FC, that's a good win. But, you know, Toronto FC is also a hard team to peg. You know, they're up and down, up and down. So this winning streak that they have, and NYC FC is in there as well, this winning streak that they have isn't necessarily completely indicative of the heights that this team can have. This team is vulnerable in some ways. I mean, you date back and you look at, you know, their last loss was against the Red Bulls, a 4-1 loss. That's a pretty comprehensive loss to have. And then soon after that was that 2-2 draw against Chicago Fire. So there are weaknesses for this team. So when you look at the winning streak isn't necessarily, you have to kind of dig into it a little bit to understand that it's a good winning streak you have, but the opponents weren't exactly the top of the league.
All right, Seth. Well, you know, it's going to probably be a good game for you guys because you're going to probably have a numbers advantage given that Orlando City gets a red card just about every game. and we're going to get the Geiger show on Saturday night. So that could add some fun and excitement to the match as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, we appreciate you coming on and giving us the lowdown on our opponents this Saturday. And it's you know, the last meeting of the season, unless there's a playoff meeting. So this is a very, very important match for Orlando City. But of course, they have yet to play well with Kaká out of the lineup. So you know, who knows what's going to happen? MLS, just when you think you have it pegged, you know, something changes. I mean, we came into the Philadelphia match seeing two of the three teams in the league with the three most conceded goals, and it was a 0-0 draw. So you never know what you're going to get with MLS, and you really never know what you're going to get with pro refs. So, you know, we appreciate you coming on, and, you know, aside from Saturday night, we wish you guys luck the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. You know, again, I hope to make it down there again. It was a fun stadium, and you guys have definitely done well for an expansion side. So, yeah, kudos to you for a good season, and let's see what happens this weekend.
All right, we're just about ready to wrap up this edition of the Mainland Podcast. We definitely want to thank our guest, Seth from the Bent Musket, for coming on the show and giving us the lowdown on the New England Revolution. He's, you know, knowledgeable dude. You know, check him out over at thebentmusket.com. We'll certainly we appreciate him giving us the skinny because it's been a while since we've seen the Revs, and a lot has changed since that 2-2 draw that night, which was a really cool game, by the way. I mean, that was one of my favorite moments, I think, when Aurelien Collin was calling for the ball and moving forward, and all of a sudden your center back is playing striker. And lo and behold, he scores on a header and ties the game. So that was one of the – I think when I look back at the season, that's one of the moments that stands out for me. But let's look ahead. And Alan, I'm going to start with you. I want to know what you expect to see on Saturday night and what your predicted final score will be.
Well, I'd like to see Orlando still have 11 guys available with all the people that we're going to be missing on international duty. I think the person that I am watching, and this might just be because I'm a huge USMNT fan and have always been a huge Charlie Davies fan because I'm from the D.C. area, I'll be watching Charlie Davies just because his comeback story is so good. He's playing so well right now, and you have to think that the Orlando City back line is going to key on him and keep him from finding the back of the net. So that's the guy I'm watching. And honestly, I think that back line is really starting to come together. That's one of the positives I've been taking from last game and then the game – you know, the game before that. I think they're starting to gel a little bit. There's been constant improvement since David Mateos has been inserted into the lineup. I guess if I had to pick a final score, I'm predicting this to be low scoring. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 0-0 draw, to be honest, just because Orlando City is kind of lacking offense coming into this, but their defense is playing really well.
Okay, fair enough. Andrew, what's your key matchup on Saturday, and what's your prediction?
My key matchup is got to be, depending on our lineup, it's got to be Wen and Bunbury playing, keeping it wide, and then seeing how they can actually do on the matchups between Ramos and Ash, and with Bowden tracking back, maybe that extra wing back will help. I've definitely got a feel that that's going to be our weakness. We haven't played wide all season, unless when we were actually winning. We've been playing very narrow. I'm very concerned that they're just going to get the crosses in, and we won't be able to deal with it. Having gotten the prediction right last week, I am going to go with a 2-1 New England win. I just feel like they're going to have the pace. We're missing some really key guys that could probably hold us together. And I just think they're going to be better on the night for us against us.
All right. Well, my key matchup, I think, is the Orlando City defensive midfield. Can Carrasco and Aguita protect that back line from that wave after wave of New England attack? I don't expect Orlando to have a large percentage of the possession in this game because of who's missing. I think that when you have guys like Kaká and Laren and Rivas, you those guys create space for each other. And the guys that are going to be replacing them are not the kinds of guys that are going to take defenders away from the others. So I think that it's going to be difficult for Orlando City to score. And I'm going to also predict a 2-1 New England win in this game because I just think playing on the road, this team has not played well on the road. And if they get somebody sent off, it's going to be an ugly, lopsided final score. But I'm hoping that that the Geiger show will keep the red in his pocket, and that Orlando City can at least finish with 11 men, and keep it a respectable scoreline. Maybe they get some kind of crazy bounce, some own goal, or something weird, or a penalty, and maybe get out of there with a draw. It would be really, really super to get out of there with a point, but. Being realistic, the way that New England has been playing and with Orlando City's heavy losses to international duty and injury and suspension, it's a lot to ask for the team to go up to New England and take a point or more out of Foxborough. So I think, on your side on that, Andrew?
Damn, I'm the optimist, huh?
Yeah. And when the optimist is predicting nil-nil, that says a lot, I think.
That says he's been watching the games closely, and he's really as optimistic as we are.
That's right. Well, guys, I think that's just about a wrap for this week. I appreciate you coming on and talking about the Fire, talking about the Revs, and for once, it's nice to do one of these. We're not talking about like a 4-0 loss with a guy getting sent off in the first half. So at least there's that. So we as a podcast can build on that for next week. So be sure to check out all of our game coverage at themainland.com. It's Maine, M-A-N-E, like a lion's mane. Also check us out on Twitter, at themainland, same M-A-N-E. At themainland is our Twitter handle. We'll be live tweeting the game. Obviously, we'll be tweeting out our stories, so you can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and all of that fun stuff. And we will see you. We'll be back next week. On behalf of Alan Etzler and Andrew Harrison will be back next week to break down the New England Revolution and talk about, I believe, Sporting Kansas City? I think that sounds right.
Yep.
I'm closing in on a birthday, so maybe we'll even have a little birthday celebration. So until next week, I am Michael Citro signing off from the Mainland Podcast, episode 27, saying, Go City!